if enough for me. As Dalinar made his way toward Sabariel's oncoming procession, Amaram rode up, wearing his shard plate, his golden cloak trailing behind. He had a fine warhorse, the hulking breed used in Shinovar to pull heavy carts. It still looked like a pony beside Gallant.
"Is that Sabariel?"
Amaram asked, pointing at the oncoming force.
"Apparently. Should we send him away? Why would we do that?" "He's untrustworthy," Amaram said.
"He keeps his word, so far as I know," Dalinar said. "That is more than I can say for most."
"He keeps his word because he never promises anything."
Dalinar, Roian, and Amaram trotted up to Sabariel, who stepped out of a carriage at the front of the army. A carriage? For a war procession? Well, it wouldn't slow Dalinar any more than all of these scribes. In fact, he should probably have a few more carriages made ready. It would be nice for Navani to have a way to ride in comfort once the days wore long.
"Sabariel?"
Dalinar asked.
"Dalinar!"
the plump man said, shading his eyes.
"You look surprised."
"I am."
"Ha! That's reason enough to have come. Wouldn't you say, Polona?"
Dalinar could barely make out the woman sitting in the carriage, wearing an enormous, fashionable hat and a sleek gown.
"You brought your mistress?"
Dalinar asked.
"Sure. Why not? If we fail out there, I'll be dead and she'll be out on her ear. She insisted, anyway."
"Storming woman." Sabariel walked up right beside Gallant.
"I've got a feeling about you, Dalinar, old man. I think it's wise to stay close to you. Something's going to happen out there on the plains, and opportunity rises like the dawn."
Roian sniffed.
"Roian," Sabariel said, "shouldn't you be hiding under a table somewhere?"
"Perhaps I should, if only to get away from you."
Sabariel laughed.
"Well said, you old turtle. Maybe this trip won't be a complete bore. Onward, then, to glory and some such nonsense. If we find riches, remember that I get my part. I got here before Aladar. That has to count for something."
"Before?"
Dalinar said with a start. He twisted around, looking back toward the war camp bordering his own to the north. There, an army wearing Aladar's colors of white and dark green spilled out onto the shattered plains.
"Now that,"
Amaram said,
"I really didn't expect."
"We could try a coup," Iole said.
Sadius turned in his saddle toward his wife. Their guards scattered the hills around them, distant enough to be out of earshot as the High Prince and his wife enjoyed a gentle ride through the hills. In reality, the two of them had wanted a closer look at Sabariel's expansions out here west of the war camps, where he was setting up full-scale farming operations. Iole rode with eyes forward.
"Dalinar will be gone from the camp, and with him Roian, his only supporter. We could seize the pinnacle, execute the king, and take the throne."
Sadius turned his horse, looking eastward over the war camps. He could just barely make out Dalinar's army gathering distantly on the shattered plains. A coup. One last step, a slap in the face of old Gavilar. He'd do it. Storm it, he would. Except for the fact that he didn't need to.
"Dalinar has committed to this foolish expedition," Sadius said. "He'll be dead soon, surrounded and destroyed on those plains. We don't need a coup. If I'd known that he would actually do this, we wouldn't have even needed your assassin."
Iole looked away. Her assassin had failed. She considered it a strong fault on her part, though the plan had been executed with exactness. These things were never certain. Unfortunately, now that they'd tried and failed, they'd need to be careful about... Sadius turned his horse, frowning, as a messenger approached on horseback. The youth was allowed to pass the guards and proffered a letter to Iole. She read it, and her disposition darkened.
"You aren't going to like this," she said, looking up. Dalinar kicked Gallant into motion, tearing across the landscape, startling plants into their dens. He passed his army in a few minutes of hard riding and approached the new force. Aladar sat on horseback here, surveying his army. He wore a fashionable uniform, black with maroon stripes on the sleeves and a matching stock at the neck. Soldiers swarmed around him. He had one of the largest forces on the plains. Storms with Dalinar's numbers reduced, Aladar's army might be the largest. He was also one of Sadius's greatest supporters.
"How are we going to do this, Dalinar?"
Aladar asked as Dalinar trotted up.
"Do we all go out on our own, crossing different plateaus but meeting back up, or do we march in an enormous column?"
"Why?"
Dalinar asked.
"Why have you come?"
"You made such passionate arguments all along, and now you act surprised that someone listened?"
"Not someone. You."
Aladar pressed his lips to a line, finally turning to meet Dalinar's eyes.
"Ruion and Sabariel, the two biggest cowards in our midst, are marching to war. Am I to stay behind and let them seek the fulfillment of the Vengeance Pact without me?"
"The other High Princes seem content to do so."
"I suspect they are better at lying to themselves than I am."
Suddenly all of Aladar's vehement arguments, at the forefront of the faction against Dalinar, took on a different cast.
He was arguing to convince himself, Dalinar thought. He was worried all along that I was right.
"Sadius will not be pleased," Dalinar said.
"Sadius can storm off. He doesn't own me."
Aladar fiddled with his reins for a moment.
"He wants to, though. I can feel it in the deals he forces me to make, the knives he slowly places at everyone's throats. He'd have us all as his slaves by the end of this."
"Aladar,"
Dalinar said, moving his horse right up alongside the other man's so the two of them faced each other directly. He held Aladar's eyes.
"Tell me Sadius didn't put you up to this. Tell me this isn't part of another plot to abandon or betray me."
Aladar smiled.
"You think I'd just tell you if it were?"
"I would hear a promise from your own lips."
"And you'll trust that promise? How well did that serve you, Dalinar, when Sadius professed his friendship?"
"A promise, Aladar."
Aladar met his eyes.
"I think the things you say about Alethkar are naive at best, and undoubtedly impossible. Those delusions of yours aren't a sign of madness, as Sadius wants us to think. They're just the dreams of a man who wants desperately to believe in something. Something foolish. Honor is a word applied to the actions of men from the past who have had their lives scrubbed clean by historians."
He hesitated.
"But, storm me for a fool, Dalinar. I wish they could be true. I came for myself, not Sadius. I won't betray you. Even if Alethkar can't ever be what you want, we can at least crush the Parshendi and avenge old Gavilar. It's just the right thing to do."
Dalinar nodded.
"I could be lying," Aladar said.
"But you aren't."
"How do you know?"
"Honestly, I don't. But if this is all going to work, I'm going to have to trust some of you."
To an extent. He would never put himself in another position like the tower. Either way, Aladar's presence meant this incursion was actually possible. Together, the four of them would likely outnumber the Parshendi, though he wasn't certain how trustworthy the scribes' counts of their numbers were. It was not the grand coalition of all High Princes that Dalinar had wanted, but even with the chasms favoring the Parshendi, this could be enough.
"We march together," Dalinar said, pointing. "I don't want us spread out. We keep to plateaus next to one another, or the same plateau when possible. And you'll need to leave your parshmen behind."
"That's an unusual requirement," Aladar said with a frown.
"We're marching against their cousins," Dalinar said. "Best to not risk the possibility of them turning against us."
"But they'd never," Bah! Whatever. It can be done.
Dalinar nodded, extending a hand to Aladar, as, behind, Roian and Amaram finally trotted up. Dalinar had outstripped them on Gallant.
Thank you, Dalinar said to Aladar.
You really do believe in all of this, don't you?
Yes.
Aladar extended his hand, but hesitated.
You realize that I'm stained through and through. I've got blood on these hands, Dalinar. I'm not some perfect, honorable knight, as you seem to want to pretend.
I know you're not,
Dalinar said, taking the hand.
I'm not either. We will have to do.
They shared a nod. Then Dalinar turned Gallant and began to trot back toward his own army. Roian groaned, complaining about his thighs after having galloped all the way over. The ride today was not going to be pleasant for him. Amaram fell in beside Dalinar.
First Saboreal, then Aladar. Your trust seems to come cheaply today, Dalinar.
Would you have me turn them away?
Think how spectacular this victory would be if we did it on our own.
I hope we're above such vainglory, old friend, Dalinar said.
They rode for a time, passing Adolin and Shallan again. Dalinar scanned his force and noticed something. A tall man in blue sat on a stone in the midst of Bridge Four's bodyguards.
Speaking of fools...
Come with me,
Dalinar said to Amaram. Amaram let his horse lag behind.
I think I should go see to...
Come,
Dalinar said sharply.
I want you to speak to that young man so we can put a stop to the rumors and the things he's been saying about you. Those don't do anyone any good.
Very well,
Amaram said, catching up. Kaladin found himself standing up amid the bridgemen, despite the pain of his leg, as he noticed Adolin and Shallan riding past. He followed the pair with his eyes. Adolin, astride his thick-hooved Rashadium, and Shallan on a more modestly sized brown animal. She looked gorgeous. Kaladin was willing to admit it, if only to himself. Brilliant red hair, ready smile. She said something clever. Kaladin could almost hear the words. He waited, hoping that she'd look toward him, meet his eyes across the short distance. She didn't. She rode on, and Kaladin felt like an utter fool. A part of him wanted to hate Adolin for holding her attention, but he found that he couldn't. The truth was, he liked Adolin. And those two were good for one another. They fit. Perhaps Kaladin could hate that. He settled back down on a rock, bowing his head. The bridgemen crowded in around him. Hopefully they hadn't seen Kaladin following Shallan with his eyes, straining to hear her voice. Renarin stood, like a shade, at the back of the group. The bridgemen were coming to accept him, but he still seemed very awkward around them. Of course, he seemed awkward around most people.
I need to talk to him more about his condition, Kaladin thought.
Something seemed off to him about that man and his explanation of the epilepsy.
Why are you here, sir?
Bissig asked, drawing Kaladin's attention back to the other bridgeman.
I wanted to see you off, Kaladin said, sighing. I assumed you'd be happy to see me.
You are like child,
Rock said, wagging a thick finger at Kaladin.
What would you do, great Captain Stormblessed, if you caught one of these men walking about with hurt leg? You would have that man beaten, once he healed, of course.
I thought, Kaladin noted, that I was your commander.
Nah, can't be, Teft said, because our commander would be smart enough to stay in bed.
Eat much stew, Rock said. I left you stew to eat while I am gone.
You're going on the expedition? Kaladin asked, looking up at the large horn eater. I thought you were just seeing the men off. You weren't willing to fight. What will you do out there?
Someone must fix food for them, Rock said. This expedition, it will take days. I will not leave my friends to the mercy of camp chefs. Ha! The food they cook will all be from Soulcast grain and meat. Tastes like creme. Someone must come with proper spices.
Kaladin looked up at the group of frowning men.
Fine, he said. I'll go back. Storms, I... Why were the bridgemen parting?
Rock looked over his shoulder, then laughed, backing away.
Now we shall see real trouble.
Behind them, Dalinar Colin was climbing from his saddle. Kaladin sighed, then waved for Lopin to help him to his feet so he could salute properly. He got upright, earning a glare from Teft, before noticing that Dalinar was not alone. Amaram. Kaladin stiffened, straining to keep his face expressionless. Dalinar and Amaram approached. The pain in Kaladin's leg seemed to fade, and for the moment he could only see that man. That monster of a man. Wearing plate Kaladin had earned, a golden cloak billowing out behind, bearing the symbol of the Knight's Radiant.
Control yourself, Kaladin thought.
He managed to swallow his rage. Last time it had gotten the better of him, he'd earned himself weeks in prison.
You should be resting, soldier, Dalinar said.
Yes, sir, Kaladin replied. My men have already made that abundantly clear.
Then you trained them well. I'm proud to have them along with me on this expedition.
Teft saluted.
If there is danger to you, Bright Lord, it will be out there on the plains. We can't protect you if we wait back here.
Kaladin frowned, realizing something.
Scar is here. Teft. So who is watching the king?
We've seen to it, sir,
Teft said.
Bright Lord Dalinar asked me to leave our best man behind with a team of his own selection. They'll watch the king.
Their best man. Coldness. Moash. Moash had been left in charge of the king's safety and had a team of his own choosing. Storms.
Amaram,
Dalinar said, waving for the High Lord to step up.
You told me that you'd never seen this man before arriving here on the Shattered Plains. Is that true?
Kaladin met the eyes of a murderer.
Yes,
Amaram said.
What of his claim that you took your blade and plate from him?
Dalinar asked.
Bright Lord,
Amaram said, taking Dalinar by the arm.
I don't know if the lad is touched in the head or merely starved for attention. Perhaps he served in my army, as he claims. He certainly bears the correct slave brand. But his allegations regarding me are obviously preposterous.
Dalinar nodded to himself, as if this were all expected.
I believe an apology is due.
Kaladin struggled to remain upright, his leg feeling weak. So this would be his final punishment, apologizing to Amaram in public, a humiliation above all others. Kaladin began.
Not you, son, Dalinar said softly.
Amaram turned, posture suddenly more alert, like that of a man preparing for a fight.
Surely you don't believe these allegations, Dalinar. A few weeks ago, Dalinar said, I received two special visitors in camp. One was a trusted servant who had come from Kolinar in secret, bringing a precious cargo. The other was that cargo. A madman who had arrived at the gates of Kolinar, carrying a shard blade.
Amaram paled and stepped back, hand going to his side.
I told my servant, Dalinar said calmly, to go drinking with your personal guard. He knew many of them, and talk of a treasure that the madman said had been hidden for years outside the war camp. By my order, he then placed the madman's shard blade in a nearby cavern. After that, we waited.
He's summoning his blade, Kaladin thought, looking at Amaram's hand.
Kaladin reached for his side knife, but Dalinar was already raising his own hand. White mist coalesced in Dalinar's fingers, and a shard blade appeared, tip to Amaram's throat. Wider than most, it was almost cleaver-like in appearance. A blade formed in Amaram's hand a second later, a second too late. His eyes went wide as he stared at the silvery blade held to his throat. Dalinar had a shard blade.
I thought, Dalinar said, that if you had been willing to murder for one blade, you would certainly be willing to lie for a second.
And so, after I knew you'd sneaked in to see the madman on your own, I asked you to investigate his claims for me. I gave your conscience plenty of time to come clean, out of respect for our friendship. When you told me you'd found nothing, but in fact you had actually recovered the shard blade, I knew the truth.
How?
Amaram hissed, looking at the blade Dalinar held.
How did you get it back? I removed it from the cave. My men had it safe.
I wasn't about to risk it just to prove a point, Dalinar said, cold. I bonded this blade before we hid it away. That week you spent ill,
Amaram said.
Yes. Damnation!
Dalinar exhaled, a hissing sound through his teeth.
Why, Amaram, of all people I thought that you...
Bah!
Dalinar's grip on the weapon tightened, knuckles white. Amaram raised his chin as if thrusting his neck toward the point of the shard blade.
I did it,
Amaram said.
And I would do it again. The Voidbringers will soon return, and we must be strong enough to face them. That means practiced, accomplished shard-bearers. In sacrificing a few of my soldiers, I plan to save many more.
Lies, Kaladin said, stumbling forward. You just wanted the blade for yourself.
Amaram looked Kaladin in the eyes.
I am sorry for what I did to you and yours. Sometimes good men must die so that greater goals may be accomplished.
Kaladin felt a gathering chill, a numbness that spread from his heart outward. He's telling the truth, he thought. He honestly believes that he did the right thing. Amaram dismissed his blade, turning back to Dalinar.
What now?
You are guilty of murder, of killing men for personal wealth.
And what is it,
Amaram said,
when you send thousands of men to their deaths so that you may secure gem hearts, Dalinar? Is that different somehow? We all know that sometimes lives must be spent for the greater good.
Take off that cloak, Dalinar growled. You are no radiant.
Amaram reached up and undid it, then dropped it to the rock. He turned and started to walk away.
No,
Kaladin said, stumbling after him.
Let him go, son, Dalinar said, sighing. His reputation is broken.
He is still a murderer.
And we will try him fairly, Dalinar said. Once I return. I can't imprison him. Shardbearers are above that, and he'd cut his way out anyway. Either you execute a shardbearer or you leave him free.
Kaladin sagged, and Lopin appeared on one side, holding him up while Teft got under his other arm. He felt drained.
Sometimes lives must be spent for the greater good. Thank you,
Kaladin said to Dalinar,
for believing me.
I do listen sometimes, soldier,
Dalinar said.
Now go back to camp and get some rest.
Kaladin nodded.
Sir, stay safe out there.
Dalinar smiled grimly.
If possible. At least now I've got a way to fight that assassin, if he arrives. With all of these shard blades flying around lately, I figured having one myself made too much sense to ignore.
He narrowed his eyes, turning eastward.
Even if it feels wrong somehow to hold one. Strange, that. Why should it feel wrong? Perhaps I just miss my old blade.
Dalinar dismissed the blade. Go, he said, walking back toward his horse, where High Prince Roian, looking stunned, was watching Amaram stalk away, his personal guard of 50 joining him. Yes, that was Aladar's banner joining Dalinar's. Sadeus could make it out through the spyglass. He lowered it and sat quietly for a long, long time. So long that his guards and even his wife started to fidget and look nervous. But there was no reason. He quelled his annoyance.
Let them die out there, he said. All four. Ile, make a report for me. I would like to know... Ile?
His wife started, looking toward him.
Is all well?
I was merely thinking, she said, seeming distant, about the future and what it is going to bring for us.
It is going to bring Alethkar new high princes, Sadia said. Make a report of which among our sworn high lords would be appropriate to take the place of those who will fall on Dalinar's trip.
He tossed the spyglass back to the messenger.
We do nothing until they're dead. This will end, it appears, with Dalinar killed by the Parshendi after all. Aladar can go with him, and to damnation with the lot of them.
He turned his horse and continued the day's ride, his back pointedly toward the shattered plains. 77. Trust.
One danger in deploying such a potent weapon will be the potential encouragement of those exploring the Nael Bond. Care must be taken to avoid placing these subjects in situations of powerful stress, unless you accept the consequences of their potential investiture.
From the diagram, Floorboard 27, Paragraph 6.
Like a river suddenly undammed, the four armies flooded out onto the plateaus. Shallan watched from horseback, excited, anxious. Her little part of the convoy included Vatha and her soldiers, along with Mari, her lady's maid. Gaz notably hadn't arrived yet, and Vatha claimed to not know where he was. Perhaps she should have looked more into the nature of his debts. She'd been so busy with other things. Storms. If the man vanished, how would she feel about that? She would have to deal with that later. Today she was part of something extremely important, a story that had begun with Gavilar and Dalinar's first hunting expedition into the unclaimed hills years ago. Now came the final chapter, the mission that would unearth the truth and determine the future of the Shattered Plains, the Parshendi, and perhaps Alethkar itself. Shallan kicked her horse forward, eager. The gelding started to walk, placid, despite Shallan's prodding. Storming animal. Adolin trotted up beside her on Shore Blood. The beautiful animal was pure white, not dusty gray like some horses she'd seen, but actually white. That Adolin should have the larger horse was patently unfair. She was shorter than he was, so she should be on the taller horse. You purposely gave me a slow one, Shallan complained, didn't you?
Sure did.
I'd smack you if I could reach you up there. He chuckled.
You said you don't have a lot of experience riding, so I picked a horse that had a lot of experience being ridden. Trust me, you'll be thankful.
I want to ride in a majestic charge as we begin our expedition.
And you can do so.
Slowly.
Technically, slow speeds can be very majestic.
Technically, she said, a man doesn't need all of his toes. Shall we remove a few of yours and prove it? He laughed.
As long as you don't hurt my face, I suppose.
Don't be ridiculous. I like your face. He grinned, shard plate helm hanging from his saddle so as to not mess up his hair. She waited for him to add a quip to hers, but he didn't. That was all right. She liked Adolin as he was. He was kind, noble, and genuine. It didn't matter that he wasn't brilliant or whatever else Kaladin was. She couldn't even define it. So there. Passionate, with an intense, smoldering resolve. A leashed anger that he used because he had dominated it. And a certain tempting arrogance, not the haughty pride of a high lord, instead the secure, stable sense of determination that whispered that no matter who you were or what you did, you could not hurt him, could not change him. He was, like the wind and rocks were. Shallan completely missed what Adolin said next. She blushed. What was that? I said that Sabariel has a carriage. You might want to travel with him. Because I'm too delicate for riding? Shallan said. Did you miss that I walked back through the chasms in the middle of a high storm? No. But walking and riding are different. I mean, the soreness. Soreness? Shallan asked. Why would I be sore? Doesn't the horse do all of the work? Adolin looked at her, eyes widening. She said. Dumb question. You said you'd ridden before. Ponies, she said. On my father's estates? Around in circles? All right, from that expression, I'm led to believe I'm being an idiot. When I get sore, I'll go ride with Sabariel.
Before you get sore, Adolin said. We'll give it an hour.
As annoyed as she was at this turn, she couldn't deny his expertise. Yasna had once defined a fool as a person who ignored information because it disagreed with desired results. She determined to not be bothered and instead enjoy the ride. The army as a whole moved slowly, considering that each piece seemed to be so efficient. Spearmen in blocks, scribes on horseback, scouts roving outward. Dalinar had 6 of the massive mechanical bridges, but he had also brought all of the former bridgemen and their simpler man-carried bridges, designed as copies of the ones they'd left in Sadius's camp. That was good, since Sabariel only had a couple of bridge crews. She allowed herself a moment of personal satisfaction at the fact that he'd come on the expedition. As she was thinking on that, she noticed someone running up the line of troops behind her. A short man, with an eye patch, who drew glares from Adolin's bridgeman guards for the day. Gaz, Shallan said with relief as he hustled up, carrying a package under his arm. Her fears that he'd been knifed in an alley somewhere were unfounded.
Sorry, he said. It came. You owe the merchant 2 sapphire bromes, Brightness.
It? Shallan asked, accepting the package.
Yeah. You asked me to find one for you. My storming did.
He seemed proud of himself. She unwrapped the cloth around the rectangular object and found inside a book. Words of Radiance, the cover said. The sides were worn and the pages faded. One patch across the top was even stained from spilled ink sometime in the past. Rarely had she been as pleased to receive something so damaged. Gaz, she said. You're wonderful. He grinned, shooting Vatha a triumphant smile. The taller man rolled his eyes, muttering something Shallan didn't hear. Thank you, Shallan said. Thank you truly, Gaz. As the time passed and one day led into another, Shallan found the distraction of the book extremely welcome. The armies moved about as fast as a herd of sleepy chulls, and the scenery was actually quite boring, though she'd never admit that to Kaladin or Adolin, considering what she'd told them last time she was out here. The book, though. The book was wonderful and frustrating. But what was the wicked thing of eminence that led to the recreants, she thought, writing the quote in her notebook. It was the second day of their travel on the plains, and she had agreed to ride in the coach Adolin had provided, alone, though it baffled Adolin why she wouldn't want her lady's maid with her. Shallan did not want to explain pattern to the girl. The book had a chapter for each order of knights radiant, with talk of their traditions, their abilities, and their attitudes. The author admitted that a lot of it was hearsay. The book had been written 200 years after the recreants, and by then facts, lore, and superstition had mixed freely. Beyond that, it was in an old dialect of Alethi, using the protoscript, a precursor to the true women's script of modern day. She spent a lot of her time sorting out meanings, occasionally calling over some of Navani's scholars to provide definitions or interpretation. Still, she had learned a great deal. For example, each order had different ideals or standards to determine advancement. Some were specific, others left to the interpretation of the Spren. Also, some orders were individualistic, while others, like the Windrunners, functioned in teams with a specific hierarchy. She settled back, thinking about the powers described. Would the others be appearing then, as she and Jasnah had? Men who could glide elegantly across the ground as if they weighed nothing? Women who could melt stone with a touch? Pattern had offered some few insights, but mostly he had been of use telling her what sounded likely to have been real and what from the book was a mistake, based on hearsay. His memory was spotty, but growing much better, and hearing what the book said often made him remember more. Right now, he buzzed on the seat beside her in a contented way. The carriage hit a bump. It was rough out here. But at least in the coach, she could read and reference other books at the same time. That would have been practically impossible while riding. The coach did make her feel shut away, though. Not everyone who tries to take care of you is trying to do what your father did, she told herself firmly. Adolin's warned of soreness had never manifested, of course. Originally, she'd felt a small amount of pain in her thighs from holding herself in place in the saddle, but Stormlight had made it vanish. Pattern said, climbing onto the door of the carriage. It comes. Shallan looked out the window and felt a drop of water sprinkle against her face. Rock darkened as rain coated it. Soon the air filled with a steady drizzle, light and pleasant. Though colder, it reminded her of some of the rainfalls back in Yaakoved. Here in the Stormlands, it seemed that rain was rarely this soft. She pulled down the shades and scooted to the center of the seat so she wouldn't get rained on. She soon found that the pleasing sound of water muffled the soldiers' voices and the monotonous sound of marching feet, making it a nice accompaniment to reading. A quote sparked her interest, and so she dug out her sketch of the shattered plains and her old maps of Stormseat. I need to find out how these maps relate, she thought. Multiple points of reference, preferably. If she could identify two places on the shattered plains that matched points on her map of Stormseat, she could judge how large Stormseat had been. The old map had no scale. And then overlay it on the map of the shattered plains. That would give them some context. What really drew her attention was the Oath Gate. On the map of Stormseat, Jasnah thought it was represented by a round disk, like a dais, on the southwestern side of the city. Was there a doorway there on that dais somewhere? A magical portal to Urethiru? How did one of the knights operate it? Pattern said. Shallan's carriage started to slow. She frowned, scooting to the door, meaning to peek out the window. The door opened, however, to reveal High Lady Navani standing outside, Dalinar himself holding up an umbrella for her. "Would you mind company?" Navani asked. "Not at all, Brightness," Shallan said, scrambling to pick up her papers and books, which she'd spread about on all of the seats. Navani patted Dalinar fondly on the arm, then climbed into the coach, using a towel to dry her feet and legs. She sat once Dalinar shut the door. They started rolling again, and Shallan fidgeted with her papers. What was her relationship with Navani? She was Adolin's aunt, but she was romantically involved with his father. So she was kind of Shallan's future mother-in-law, though by Vorin tradition Dalinar would never be allowed to marry her. Shallan had tried for weeks to get this woman to listen to her, and had failed. Now she seemed to have been forgiven for bearing the news of Jasnah's death. Did that mean Navani liked her? So, Shallan said, feeling awkward. Did Dalinar exile you to the coach to protect you from getting sore, as Adolin did to me? Sore? Heavens, no. If anyone should be riding in the coach, it's Dalinar. When there is fighting to be done, we'll need him rested and ready. I came because it's rather difficult to read while riding in the rain. Oh. Shallan shifted in her seat. Navani studied her, then finally sighed. I have been ignoring things, the older woman said, that I should not, because they bring me pain. I'm sorry. You have nothing to apologize for. Navani held out her hand toward Shallan. May I? Shallan looked at her handful of notes, diagrams, and maps. She hesitated. You are engaged in work you obviously think very important, Navani said softly. This city Yasna was searching for, according to the notes you sent me? Perhaps I can help you interpret my daughter's intentions. Was there anything in these pages that would incriminate Shallan and reveal her powers, her activities as Vale? She didn't think so. She'd been studying the Knights Radiant as part of it, but she was searching for their center of power, so that made sense. Hesitant, she handed over the papers. Navani leafed through them, reading by sphere light. The organization of these notes is interesting. Shallan blushed. The organization made sense to her. As Navani continued to look through the notes, Shallan found herself growing oddly anxious. She'd wanted Navani's help. She'd all but begged for it. Now, however, she found herself feeling like this woman was intruding. This had become Shallan's project now, her duty and her quest. Now that Navani had apparently overcome her grief, would she insist on taking over completely? You think, like an artist, Navani said. I can see it in the way you put the notes together. Well, I suppose I can't expect everything you do to be annotated precisely as I'd wish. A magical portal to another city. Yasna actually believed in this? Yes. Navani said. Then it's probably true. That girl never did have the decency to be wrong an appropriate amount of the time. Shallan nodded, glancing at the notes, feeling anxious. Oh, don't get so touchy, Navani said. I'm not going to steal the project from you. I'm that transparent, Shallan said. This research is obviously very important to you. I assume Yasna persuaded you that the fate of the world itself rested upon the answers you find? She did. Damnation, Navani said, flipping to the next page. I shouldn't have ignored you. It was petty. It was the act of a grieving mother. Scholars don't have time for such nonsense. Navani blinked, and Shallan caught a tear in the woman's eye. You're still human, Shallan said, reaching across, putting her hand on Navani's knee. We can't all be emotionless chunks of rock like Yasna. Navani smiled. She sometimes had the empathy of a corpse, didn't she? Comes from being too brilliant, Shallan said. You grow accustomed to everyone else being something of an idiot trying to keep up with you. Channa knows I wondered sometimes how I raised that child without strangling her. By age 6, she was pointing out my logical fallacies as I tried to get her to go to bed on time. Shallan grinned. I always just assumed she was born in her 30s. Oh, she was. It just took 30-some years for her body to catch up. Navani smiled. I won't take this from you. But neither should I allow you to attempt a project so important on your own. I would be part, figuring out the puzzles that captivated her. It will be like having her again. My little Yasna. Insufferable and wonderful. How surreal it was to imagine Yasna as a child being held by a mother. It would be an honor to have your aid, Brightness Navani. Navani held up the page. You're trying to overlay Stormseat with the Shattered Plains. It's not going to work unless you have a point of reference. Preferably two, Shallan said. It's been centuries since that city fell. It was destroyed during Ahari Etiam itself, I believe. We're going to have trouble finding clues out here, though your list of descriptions will help. She tapped her finger against the papers. This isn't my area of expertise, but I have several archaeologists among Dalinar's scribes. I should show them these pages. Shallan nodded. We'll want copies of everything here, Navani said. I don't want to lose originals to all of this rain. I could have the scribes work on it tonight after we camp. If you wish. Navani looked up at her, then frowned. It is your decision. You're serious? Shallan asked. Absolutely. Think of me as an additional resource. All right, then. Yes, have them make copies, Shallan said, digging in her satchel. And copies of this, too. It's my attempt at recreating one of the murals described as being on the outer wall of the temple to Chinarinach in Stormseat. It faced leeward and was supposedly shaded, so we might be able to find hints of it. Also, I need a surveyor to measure each new plateau we cross once we get farther in. I can draw them out, but my spatial reasoning can be off. I want exact sizes to make the map more accurate. I'll need guards and scribes to ride out with me ahead of the army to visit plateaus parallel to our course. It would really help if you could convince Dalinar to allow this. I'd like a team to study the quotes on that page underneath the map. They talk about methods for opening the Oath Gate, which was supposed to be the duty of the Knights Radiant. Hopefully we can discover another method. Also, alert Dalinar that we'll be trying to open the portal if we find it. I do not expect there to be anything dangerous on the other side, but he'll undoubtedly want to send soldiers through first. Navani raised an eyebrow at her. You've done a touch of thinking about this, I see. Shallan nodded, blushing. I'll see it done, Navani said. I myself will head the research team studying those quotes you mention. She hesitated. Do you know why Iasna thought this city, Urethiro, was so important? Because it was the seat of the Knights Radiant, and she expected to find information on them and the Voidbringers there. So she was like Dalinar, Navani said, trying to bring back powers that perhaps we should leave alone. Shallan felt a sudden spike of anxiety. I need to say it. Say something. She wasn't trying. She succeeded. Succeeded? Shallan took a deep breath. I don't know what she said regarding the origin of her soulcaster, but the truth was that it was a fake. Iasna could soulcast on her own without any Fabriel. I saw her do it. She knew secrets from the past. Secrets I don't think anyone else knows. Brightness, Navani. Your daughter was one of the Knights Radiant. Or as close to one as the world was going to have again. Navani raised an eyebrow, obviously skeptical. I swear this is true, Shallan said, on the 10th name of the Almighty. That is disturbing. Radiance, heralds, and void bringers alike are supposed to be gone. We won that war. I know. I will go get to work on this, Navani said, knocking for the carriage driver to halt the vehicle.
The weeping began, a steady stream of rain. Kaladin could hear it inside his room like a whisper in the background. Weak, miserable rain, without the fury and passion of a true high storm. He lay in the darkness, listening to the patter, feeling his leg throb. Wet, cold air leaked into his room, and he dug for the extra blankets that the quartermaster had delivered. He curled up and tried to sleep, but after sleeping most of the day yesterday, the day that Dalinar's army had left, he found himself wide awake. He hated being wounded. Bed rest wasn't supposed to happen to him. Not anymore. Syl. The weeping was a bad time for him. Days spent trapped indoors. A perpetual gloom in the sky that seemed to affect him more than it did others, leaving him lethargic and uncaring. A knock came at his door. Kaladin raised his head in the darkness, then sat up and settled himself on his bench of a bed. Come, he said.
The door opened and let in the sound of rain, like a thousand little footsteps scrambling about. Very little light accompanied the sounds. The overcast sky of the Weeping left the land in perpetual twilight. Moash stepped in. He wore his shard plate, as always.
"Storms, Cal. Were you asleep? I'm sorry."
"No, I was awake."
"In the darkness?"
Kaladin shrugged. Moash clicked the door shut behind him, but took off his gauntlet and hung it from a clip at the waist of his shard plate. He reached beneath a fold in the metal and pulled out a handful of spheres to light his way. Riches that would have seemed incredible to Bridgman were now pocket change to Moash.
"Aren't you supposed to be guarding the king?" Kaladin asked.
"On and off," Moash said, sounding eager.
"They quartered the five of us guards up by his rooms. In the palace itself."
"Kaladin, it's perfect."
"When?" Kaladin asked softly.
"We don't want to ruin Dalinar's expedition," Moash said. "So we're going to wait until he's out there some distance. Maybe until he's engaged the enemy. That way he'll be committed and won't turn back when he gets news. Better for Alethkar if he succeeds at defeating the Parshendi. He will return a hero and a king."
Kaladin nodded, feeling sick.
"We have everything planned out," Moash said. "We'll raise an alert in the palace that the assassin in white has been seen. Then we'll do what was done last time. Send all of the servants into hiding in their rooms. Nobody will be around to see what we do. Nobody will get hurt. And they'll all believe that the Shin assassin was behind this. We couldn't have asked for this to play out better. And you won't have to do anything, Cal. Graves says that we won't need your help after all."
"So why are you here?" Kaladin asked.
"I just wanted to check on you," Moash said. He stepped in closer.
"Is it true, what Lopin says? About your abilities?"
"Storming-haired Dazian."
Lopin had stayed behind, with Dabbard and Haber, to take care of the barrack and watch over Kaladin. They'd been talking to Moash, it seemed.
"Yes," Kaladin said.
"What happened?"
"I'm not sure," he lied. "I offended Syl. I haven't seen her in days. Without her, I can't draw in Stormlight."
"We'll have to fix that somehow," Moash said. "Either that or get you plate and blade of your own."
Kaladin looked up at his friend.
"I think she left because of the plot to kill the king, Moash. I don't think a Radiant could be involved in something like this."
"Shouldn't a Radiant care about doing what is right? Even if it means a difficult decision?"
"Sometimes lives must be spent for the greater good," Kaladin said.
"Yes, exactly.
That's what Amaram said, in regards to my friends, whom he murdered to cover up his secrets."
"Well, that's different, obviously. He's a light eyes."
Kaladin looked to Moash, whose eyes had turned as light a tan as those of any Bright Lord. Same color as Amaram's, actually.
"So are you."
"Cal," Moash said, "you're worrying me. Don't say things like that."
Kaladin looked away.
"The king wanted me to deliver a message," Moash said. "That's my excuse for being here. He wants you to come talk to him."
"What? Why?"
"I don't know. He's been dipping into the wine now that Dalinar is gone. Not the orange stuff, either. I'll tell him you're too wounded to come."
Kaladin nodded.
"Cal," Moash said, "we can trust you, right? You're not having second thoughts?"
"You said it yourself," Kaladin said. "I don't have to do anything. I just have to stay away."
What could I do anyway, wounded with no spren? Everything was in motion. It was too far along for him to stop.
"Great," Moash said. "You heal up, all right?"
Moash walked out, leaving Kaladin in the darkness again. 78. Contradictions.
"Ah, but they were left behind. It is obvious from the nature of the bond, but where, set off obvious realization like a prisity. They are with the Shin. We must find one. Can we make to use a truthless? Can we craft a weapon?"
From the diagram, floorboard 17, paragraph 2. Every second letter starting with the first.
In the darkness, Shallan's violet spheres gave life to the rain. Without the spheres, she couldn't see the drops, only hear their deaths upon the stones and the cloth of her pavilion. With the light, each falling speck of water flashed briefly, like star spren. She sat at the edge of the pavilion, as she liked to watch the rainfall between bouts of sketching, while the other scholars sat closer to the center. So did Vatha and a couple of his soldiers, watching over her like nesting sky eels with a single pup. It amused her that they'd grown so protective. They seemed actively proud to be her soldiers. She'd honestly expected them to run off after gaining their clemency. 4 days into the weeping and she still enjoyed the weather. Why did the soft sound of gentle rain make her feel more imaginative? Around her, creation spren slowly vanished, most having taken the shapes of things about the camp. Swords that sheathed and unsheathed repeatedly, tiny tents that untied and blew in unseen wind. Her picture was of Yasna as she'd been on that night just over a month ago, when Shallan had last seen her, leaning upon the desk of a darkened ship's cabin, hand pushing back hair, freed from its customary twists and braids, exhausted, overwhelmed, terrified. The drawing didn't depict a single faithful memory, not as Shallan usually did them. This was a recreation of what she remembered, an interpretation that was not exact. Shallan was proud of it, as she'd captured Yasna's contradictions. Contradictions. Those were what made people real. Yasna exhausted, yet somehow still strong. Stronger even because of the vulnerability she revealed. Yasna terrified, yet also brave, for one allowed the other to exist. Yasna overwhelmed, yet powerful. Shallan had recently been trying to do more drawings like this, ones synthesized from her own imaginings. Her illusions would suffer if she could only reproduce what she'd experienced. She needed to be able to create, not just copy. The last creation spren faded away, this one imitating a puddle that was being splashed by a boot. Her sheet of paper dimpled as pattern moved up onto it. He sniffed. Useless things. The creation spren? They don't do anything. They flit around and watch, admire. Most spren have a purpose. These are merely attracted by someone else's purpose. Shallan sat back, thinking on that, as Yasna had taught her. Nearby, the scholars and ardents argued about how large Stormseat had been. Navani had done her part well, better than Shallan could have hoped. The army's scholars now worked at Shallan's command. Around her in the night, an uncountable array of lights both near and far indicated the breadth of the army. The rain continued to sprinkle down, catching the purple sphere light. She had chosen all spheres of one color. The artist Elizeth, Shallan observed to Pattern, once did an experiment. She set out only ruby spheres in their strength to light her studio. She wanted to see what effect the all-red light would have upon her art. Pattern said. To what result? At first, during a painting session, the color of light affected her strongly. She would use too little red, and fields of blossoms would look washed out. Not unexpected. The interesting thing, however, was what happened if she continued working, Shallan said. If she painted for hours by that light, the effects diminished. The colors of her reproductions grew more balanced, the pictures of flowers more vivid. She eventually concluded that her mind compensated for the colors she saw. Indeed, if she switched the color of the light during a session, she'd continue for a time to paint as if the room were still red, reacting against the new color. Pattern said, content. Humans can see the world as it is not.
It is why your lies can be so strong. You are able to not admit that they are lies. It frightens me. Why? It is wonderful. To him, she was a subject of study. For a moment she understood how Kaladin must have seen Shallan as she spoke of the chasm fiend, admiring its beauty, the form of its creation, oblivious to the present reality of its danger. It frightens me, Shallan said, because we all see the world by some kind of light personal to us, and that light changes our perception. I don't see clearly. I want to, but I don't know if I ever truly can. Eventually, a pattern broke through the sound of rain, and Dalinar Kholin entered the tent. Straight-backed and graying, he looked more like a general than a king. She had no sketches of him. It seemed a gross omission on her part, so she took a memory of him walking into the pavilion, an aide holding an umbrella for him. He strode up to Shallan.
Ah, here you are, the one who has taken command of this expedition.
Shallan belatedly scrambled to her feet and bowed. High Prince?
You have co-opted my scribes and cartographers, Dalinar said, sounding amused. They hum of it like the rainfall. Urethiru, storm seat. How did you do it?
I didn't. Brightness Navani did.
She says you convinced her.
Shallan blushed. I was really just there, and she changed her mind. Dalinar nodded curtly to the side, and his aide stepped over to the debating scholars. The aide spoke with them softly, and they rose, some quickly, others with reluctance, and departed into the rain, leaving their papers. The aide followed them, and Vatha looked to Shallan. She nodded, excusing him and the other guards. Soon Shallan and Dalinar were alone in the pavilion.
You told Navani that Yasna had discovered the secrets of the Knights Radiant, Dalinar said.
I did.
You're certain that Yasna didn't mislead you somehow, Dalinar said. Or allow you to mislead yourself, that would be far more like her.
Bright Lord, I don't think that is... She took a breath. No. She did not mislead me.
How can you be sure?
I saw it, Shallan said. I witnessed what she did, and we spoke of it. Yasna Kholin did not use a soul caster. She was one. Dalinar folded his arms, looking past Shallan into the night.
I think I'm supposed to refound the Knights Radiant. The first man I thought I could trust for the job turned out to be a murderer and a liar. Now you tell me that Yasna might have had actual power. If that is true, then I am a fool.
I don't understand.
In naming Amaram, Dalinar said, I did what I thought was my task. I wonder now if I was mistaken all along, and that refounding them was never my duty. They might be refounding themselves, and I am an arrogant meddler. You have given me a great deal to think upon. Thank you.
He did not smile as he said it. In fact, he looked severely troubled. He turned to leave, clasping his hands behind his back. Bright Lord Dalinar, Shallan said, what if your task wasn't to refound the Knights Radiant?
That is what I just said,
Dalinar replied. What if instead your task was to gather them? He looked back to her, waiting. Shallan felt a cold sweat. What was she doing? I have to tell someone sometime, she thought. I can't do as Yasna did, holding it all. This is too important. Was Dalinar Kholin the right person? Well, she certainly couldn't think of anyone better. Shallan held out her palm, then breathed in, draining one of her spheres. Then she breathed back out, sending a cloud of shimmering stormlight into the air between herself and Dalinar.
She formed it into a small image of Jasnah, the one she'd just drawn, on top of her palm.
"Almighty above," Dalinar whispered.
A single awspren, like a ring of blue smoke, burst out above him, spreading like the ripple from a stone dropped in a pond. Shallan had seen such a spren only a handful of times in her life. Dalinar stepped closer, reverent, leaning down to inspect Shallan's image.
"Can I?"
he asked, reaching out a hand. "Yes." He touched the image, causing it to fuzz back into shifting light. When he withdrew his finger, the image reformed. "It's just an illusion," Shallan said. "I can't create anything real."
"It's amazing,"
Dalinar said, his voice so soft she could barely hear it over the pattering rain.
"It is wonderful."
He looked up at her, and there were, shockingly, tears in his eyes.
"You're one of them."
"Maybe, kind of," Shallan said, feeling awkward. This man, so commanding, so much larger than life, should not be crying in front of her.
"I'm not mad," he said,
more to himself, it seemed.
"I had decided that I wasn't, but that's not the same as knowing. It's all true. They're returning."
He tapped at the image again.
"Jasnah taught you this?"
"I more stumbled into it on my own," Shallan said. "I think I was led to her so she could teach me. We didn't have much time for that, unfortunately." She grimaced, withdrawing the stormlight, heart beating quickly because of what she'd done.
"I need to give you the golden cape,"
Dalinar said, standing up straight, wiping his eyes and growing firm of voice again.
"Put you in charge of them, so we—"
"Me?" Shallan yelped, thinking of what that would mean to her alternate identity. "No, I can't. I mean, Bright Lord Sir, what I can do is mostly useful if nobody knows it's possible. I mean, if everyone is looking for my illusions, I'll never fool them."
"Fool them?"
Dalinar said. Perhaps not the best choice of words for Dalinar.
"Bright Lord Dalinar!"
Shallan spun, alert, suddenly worried that someone had seen what she did. A lithe messenger approached the tent, dripping wet, locks of hair undone from her braids and sticking to her face.
"Bright Lord Dalinar! Parshendi spotted, sir!"
"Where?"
"Eastern side of this plateau,"
the messenger said, panting.
"Scouting party, we think."
Dalinar looked from the messenger to Shallan, then cursed and started out into the rain. Shallan tossed her sketchpad onto her chair and followed.
"This could be dangerous,"
Dalinar said. "I appreciate the concern, Bright Lord," she said softly. "But I think I could actually take a spear through the stomach and my abilities would heal me up without a scar. I'm probably the most difficult person to kill in this entire camp." Dalinar strode in silence for a moment.
"The fall into the chasm?"
he asked softly. "Yes, I think I must have rescued Captain Kaladin too, though I don't know how I managed that." He grunted. They moved quickly through the rain, the water wetting Shallan's hair and clothing. She practically had to jog to keep pace with Dalinar, storming Alethi in their long legs. Guards ran up, members of Bridge 4, and fell in around them. She heard shouting in the distance. Dalinar sent the guards into a wider perimeter to give himself and Shallan a measure of privacy.
"Can you soul cast?"
Dalinar asked softly.
"Like Jasnah did?"
"Yes," Shallan said, "but I haven't practiced it much."
"It could prove very useful."
"It's also very dangerous. Jasnah didn't want me practicing without her, though now that she's gone—" "Well, I will do more with it eventually. Sir, please don't tell anyone about this. For now, at least."
"This was why Jasnah took you on as a ward," Dalinar said. "It's why she wanted you marrying Adolin, isn't it? To bind you to us?"
"Yes," Shallan said, blushing in the darkness.
"A great many things make more sense now. I will tell Navani about you, but nobody else. And I will swear her to secrecy. She can keep a secret if she has to."
She opened her mouth to say yes, but stopped herself. Was that what Jasnah would have said?
We'll send you back to the war camps, Dalinar continued, eyes forward, speaking softly. Immediately, with an escort. I don't care how hard you are to kill. You're too valuable to risk on this expedition.
Brightlord, Shallan said, splashing through a pool of water, glad she was wearing boots and leggings under the skirt. You are not my king, nor are you my high prince. You have no authority over me. My duty is to find Urithiru, so you will not be sending me back. And by your honor, I will have your promise not to tell a soul what I can do unless I give leave. That includes Brightness Navani. He stopped in place and stared at her in surprise. Then he grunted, his face barely visible.
I see Jasnah in you.
Rarely had Shallan been given such a compliment. Lights bobbed and approached in the rain, soldiers bearing sphere lanterns. Vatha and his men jogged up, having been left behind, and Bridge Four held them back for the moment.
Very well, Brightness, Dalinar said to Shallan. Your secret will remain one for now. We will consult further once this expedition is done. You have read of the things I have been seeing?
She nodded.
The world is about to change,
Dalinar said. He took a deep breath.
You give me hope, true hope, that we can change it in the right way.
The approaching scouts saluted and Bridge Four parted to allow their leader access to Dalinar. He was a portly man with a brown hat that reminded her of the one Vale wore, except it was wide-brimmed. The scout wore soldier's trousers but a leather jacket over them, and certainly didn't seem in fighting shape.
Bashan, Dalinar said. Parshendi on that plateau next to us, sir,
Bashan said, pointing.
The Parshendi stumbled over one of my scouting teams. The lads raised the alarm quickly, but we lost all three men.
Dalinar cursed softly, then turned toward High Lord Taleb, who had approached from the other direction, wearing his shard plate, which he'd painted silver.
Wake the army, Taleb. Everyone on alert.
Yes, Bright Lord,